T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
What's your name, son?
Danny Bernstein. I'm from Deerfield, Illinois.
Dan Bernstein on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
That's enough. Don't care. Not interested.
Insightful sports talk for your workday from one of Chicago's most respected radio professionals.
Professional what?
Professional penis.
You don't know what the hell you're doing!
Dan Bernstein.
The guy is full of hot air.
In a semi-permanent state of flatulence.
Middays on The Score.
Happy Friday. We're broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. We will talk some baseball to start. A little bit of real life and cold water for Chicago's baseball teams last night. And then we will talk about the PGA. Mark Cannizzaro is out there in San Francisco, longtime golf writer and columnist for the New York Post. Is going to tell us what he saw with some big names on that leaderboard with a lot of major victories, who are pushing for another one. Jason Benetti, the TV voice of the White Sox, will join us at 10. We'll do the midday midway at 10:40. Robert Mays of The Ringer, one of the smartest football minds out there. The always interesting Robert Mays will be our guest at 11. We are going to bring you some sound from the Chicago Bears inside linebackers shortly thereafter as they are meeting the media as we speak. And then at 11:40, we are going to converse with both Daniel and Danny Parkins, because they're doing something special today at Mackey Land, taking every possible precaution. They have made sure that everything has been checklisted and signed off on, and there are procedures and protocols that will keep everybody nice and safe, but they are gathering to do a show at the pool at Mackey Land today. And it was fun to hear in McNeil's voice just how excited he was to have people over, and he's talking about the food, and he's buying pool toys for kids if they're going to come by, and they're going to be family. So a little slice of social interaction safely done with a bit of normalcy. So I'm thinking sort of vicariously, it's going to be a good listen. Obviously, it's not open to the public, but it's going to be, I think, fun for all of us to at least get a sense. What we've done here on The Score is to try to keep a sense of normalcy and community through the airwaves. And I think this is just another way of reattaching some of that stuff. So I'm really looking forward to that as I'm driving around running errands later this afternoon. 312-644-6767 is the number at WSCR The Score. Email us at Bernstein@670thescore.com. You go there to listen to us live, because we stream at 670thescore.com. Do send a text when you like. The text zone is brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time. Shop online at RosenHyundai.com. When you text, we reply. Message and data rates may apply. And you text the number you call, 312-644-6767. You can follow on Twitter. It is at Bernstein670. My personal Twitter handle is at Dan_Bernstein. And we are also available via the radio.com app, the incredibly popular radio.com app that gives you full space command of your Score experience. So you can stream The Score on your mobile devices, and there's the rewind function, and you can get your podcast through that and all of it. Interact with the show and the station on Facebook by liking the 670 The Score page. And in case you didn't realize, we're on Twitch now. We are boldly moving forward into that brave new world, twitch.tv/Chicago670thescore. Hi, I'm waving at you right now. This is like Romper Room. I see you there. You don't get the Romper Room reference. Look it up. And I'm pointing at you. I'm not mad at you. Just pointing at you. And this is what we're doing on Twitch. Now, here's the deal. I am going to be on Twitch now, and I'll be able to be in the conversation as soon as I know how to figure everything out, because I think I just clicked on the right thing. And if you, I have a handle. I want to make sure I'm doing this right, and I hope it doesn't like accidentally lead into like dwarf porn or something, because I have to say I don't know exactly what I'm doing, because compared, Twitch is different from Twitter. I think I finally have kind of figured out Twitter a little bit, that where I'm comfortable with it, that I'm not going to make any egregious mistakes. Twitch maybe not so much. So I'm here. It's Bernstein Show DB. Is my handle, Bernstein Show DB. So I will be in whatever conversation there is when I can. I'll be watching, and maybe during a commercial break or something, I can kind of jump in. But this is a very strange thing, because right now I'm looking at myself talking, and I've got like this Alice in Wonderland mirrors reflecting upon mirrors as I see myself, and then a reflection of myself in my reading glasses. And I think I might be on mushrooms. I think there's a really good possibility that that could be the case. But the bottom line is, join us on Twitch, because it's new and it's different and it's fun, and we don't know exactly where we're going to go with it, because it's going to give us a lot of opportunities. So that's it's going to be fun stuff. Brian Gertsch is the video feed producer who's sort of overseeing Twitch. His job is to make sure I don't do anything stupid, frankly. And Jay Zawoski does the same or similarly as our executive producer. And Ray Diaz is the man on the board, the executioner in the studio, doing the things that he does. Somehow, The Adventures of Eloy Jimenez has brought us into a really dumb and reductive conversation. Or it certainly had me tagged in dumb and reductive conversations. It happens all the time on Twitter, and I don't know if you experience that, where people are arguing and they keep tagging you for some reason, and it's like you're in a room with people you don't want to be around, so you do the mute this conversation, which only partially works. But apparently, Eloy's wacky left field adventures where he doesn't respect boundaries. We have to teach him to be more respectful of boundaries, be they walls or fences or anything, and it's created this arbitrary discussion between who's better or worse at left field, between Eloy Jimenez and Kyle Schwarber, which is a pointless argument, because every left fielder sucks. It's left field. That's where you put the fielder who sucks, because of the direction in which you run the bases. If you ran the bases third to first, your worst fielder would be in right. But because this is the way the game is played and these are the rules, you put that guy in left, because if it hits him in the face or if it goes over his head, it's a double. Unless, of course, he is tangled up in the fence. I'm sorry. There's a couple of levels of this. First, let's hear the call. Let's hear the Jason Benetti, Steve Stone call on NBC Sports Chicago, just so we can just live this moment once again.
Into left field. Eloy going back on it at the warning track, now coming back in, and it bounces off the turf. That's a fair ball. Eloy gets tangled up in the netting, and Yelich is to third. He's coming around third on his way home, and he's inside the park with a home run.
Well, unfortunately, Eloy would tell you that he probably should have had that. And he went diving into the net, which is never a good idea, but the netting did save his season right here. He just misses it. It is clearly a fair ball. Then it hits off the netting. Eloy goes into the netting, and it's an inside the park home run.
We talked about this very situation when the netting was installed, yep, that when that came in, you could have some weird bounces that would normally be a grounds rule double. They would climb the net that is in play, and it did right there, exactly as we said when that went up, and it turns into an inside the park home run for Yelich.
Some weird thing. You have your left fielder flying into the net and getting tangled up in it. My God. And okay, on the one level, there's two things going on here. We can look at this, we can have fun with it, and then we can look at it in all seriousness, and we can do both here. First of all, that's hilarious. That happening is just hilarious. On the other hand, we have been, as Chicago sports fans, we've seen too often what a reckless giant person in the outfield can do to your team's fortunes. And we saw Tim Raines run into Ozzie Guillen, and that was a torn ACL. We saw Kyle Schwarber and Dexter Fowler, because somebody takes a bad route to a ball and weighs 250 pounds, and these are big people moving fast. And F equals MA, force is mass times acceleration. And when F is bad, you get broken bones and torn ligaments. It's an issue. It's a serious issue. What if he were to injure Luis Robert? Then what do we do with our lives? Then what happens? So at some point, he's got to stay safe. You got to make sure other people are safe. And think if the net's not there and there's just some poor schmo eating churros. What's going to happen there? That's a large guy moving fast who can't stop. And he's going to be, if he barrels into a kid. You know, luckily, we always thought the net was there to protect people from baseballs. It's also there to protect people from giant flying Cubans, because that's no good. That can hurt. And even if he does go into the net, he can hit somebody because the net's flexible. So it kind of catches him and throws him back out. It's like he's going to sky high trampoline party place. So what's the other one? Like adrenaline, where, God, ever since COVID, can you imagine like Pump It Up and Sky High and all these birthday party places? I mean, they had hand sanitizer before COVID and it still felt kind of weird in the place. All these toddlers are getting snot all over everything and licking things, and ooh, I can't even imagine what it's like now or what it's going to be like and how they're gonna have to reinvent that and spray people down with all sorts of things. Just an aside, but here are the numbers. If you really want to do this and just put it to rest, here's the deal. Kyle Schwarber's a better fielder than Eloy Jimenez, period. He just is. He's a better fielder. He's still not good at fielding, but he's a better fielder than Eloy Jimenez. If you want to use this year's numbers, Kyle Schwarber in left field over the small sample size in 2020 has been -0.3 defensive runs above average, and Eloy is 10th at -0.5 runs above average defensively. Last year, if you want to use the full season, Kyle Schwarber was 6th at -7.2 defensive runs above average, and Eloy Jimenez was 8th at -10.6. If you want to use ultimate zone rating 150, the number of runs you're worth positively or negatively over the entire season, over 150 games is what they use. And yeah, good point. Eloy's Dominican, but it can still protect you from a flying Cuban. Kyle Schwarber in 2020 was 10th among left fielders at -3.2. Eloy Jimenez was 11th at -4.8. That's this year. Last year, Kyle Schwarber was 6th at -0.8, and Eloy Jimenez was 8th at -6.5. So they're both bad. However, it does seem that one is better than the other. And it's okay, but it's a silly argument to say whose left fielder is better or worse at playing left field when that is a place where you put somebody who isn't good at fielding. That was a heat check for the baseball teams yesterday is what that was. And all the excitement over Tyler Chatwood and the gaudy numbers and everything. And that's baseball telling you, chill out on all your excitement. And what was weird was Chatwood was in the strike zone and a little wild in the strike zone, as the old baseball heads would say. The fact that he was getting squared up, even with stuff at 95, 96, 97, and the movement on the cutter that he has, that's going to be, they'll have to either, from either that's a burn the tape kind of outing and say, I don't know, and they happened to be swinging at it, the stuff was good, felt good out of my hand. I almost don't mind him getting beaten that way. Because I want to, you know, I think I told Theo this a couple of years ago when I said, I can't watch Tyler Chatwood. And I had to stop watching Tyler Chatwood when he was walking the ballpark, because you want to throw the remote through a window. And it's not as bad if a guy is throwing hard and getting beat. You want to make sure he's not tipping, obviously. That's the one thing you want to make sure. But okay, you know, it happens. And Gio Gonzalez, I don't know what you're doing there. This is, at some point, the White Sox pitching depth, the starting pitching depth, it's gonna matter if he can't hold down the fort. You know, he was on the White Sox twice, and we waited all this time for him to finally make a start for the White Sox, and then he does, and it's just not. This is another margin for error issue if he can't work around the periphery of the strike zone, he's not going to miss a lot of bats, and there's going to be a lot of hard contact. And pick up the ball. Whether it's, you know, Jose Abreu dropping one and Eloy doing what he did, man, are we ever going to see that again? He looks like a mosquito in a spider web. How is that a thing, though? Is not having an awareness of walls and fences and boundaries, is that an actual characteristic? Is that something in the negatives on scouting? You know, easy power off the bat, runs well for a big man, makes good contact, bat stays in the zone a long time. Negatives. Runs into walls too often. It doesn't know what the warning track is. You know, you're supposed to feel under your feet the surface change. Maybe we have to get him different shoes. Or is there therapy of some kind, like occupational therapy that can train someone? Or could we do a beeping warning of some kind? Is that legal to put something in of the moving walkway is now ending? Please look down. Right? That voice, and of course, when you're going from B to C concourse, it echoes oddly, so you hear moving walkway, and it's mind-numbing after a while if you spend enough time in there. Remember when we used to travel? Remember airports? Yeah, that was fun, wasn't it?
Yeah, they should put in some kind of track to warn you when you're approaching a wall.
But he can't feel it, is what I'm saying. It's there. I don't know if maybe with the fields on which he grew up playing, it wasn't a thing. Someone needs to explain to him, when you feel the crushed brick under your feet, wall coming. Oh. No one told me that before. Right? I mean, something. We need to keep Eloy Jimenez and all around him safe from his various adventures, because that was no good. There's a lot of big names on the PGA leaderboard right now. Out in San Francisco, Tiger Woods was under par. He's pleased with that. But Brooks Koepka is lurking, and he would be the first since, who was it, Harry Vardon or somebody to win it three times in a row. Mark Cannizzaro of the New York Post is out there on the course. He's going to join us next to tell us what he sees on the score.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I finally had enough of, you know, feeling sorry for myself. And it's very easy to do that, especially in this game, because it is so mentally tough. You can start blaming everything else but yourself. And, you know, sometimes you just got to pull your pants up and just move on, you know. And, you know, I feel like the momentum that I've had over the last three starts has, you know, kind of seeped into this week. I'm excited about, and you know, the funny thing is that every day I'm excited to go back to the golf course and play. Whereas before I was struggling to get up and going, oh, do I want to, you know, kind of put myself through this again? And to be honest, I'm excited to get out and play every week now.
That's Jason Day. He is leading the PGA. And this is fun to see because we have some big and telegenic names on that leaderboard right now getting set for round two. And one of the people out there on the course at Harding Bay following this event is Mark Cannizzaro of the New York Post. He is on Twitter at Mark Cannizzaro, and Canny, as they call him in golf circles, joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Mark, how are you? Thanks for getting up early.
I'm doing fine. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great, and you got to walk around and follow Tiger Woods fairly closely. It was he was a little bit all over the place, as sort of this stage of his game seems to be. But ultimately, a 2-under has to be a huge positive, especially in those weather conditions for him with his balky back.
Yeah, I think it was, because it was, you know, even though it was nicer yesterday than it had been the previous few days, it was still a morning tea time. You know, it was chilly. You know, that rough is kind of a little damp. And, you know, as you said, he hit only half of his fairways, which is hard to survive out here unless you're getting, you know, at this golf course in this tournament, unless your percentage is a little bit higher than that. But he got away with that because some of his iron play, I thought, was really, really good on the back nine. He also made some very, very critical putts. His ninth hole of the day, which was number 18, he made a 10-foot downhill putt that was, you know, going to be a difficult putt to make to get, you know, to save par, and he made that. He dropped about a 32-foot bomb on his front nine, which was the back early on. So, you know, I thought it was as good a start as he could have asked for, especially for a guy that has not played tournament golf. You know, I mean, he's played four tournament rounds since February, which, coming in, I was, you know, to be honest with you, I had written about it. I was pretty, I don't want to say critical, but I was very skeptical that he'd have any shot to contend this week with that little amount of tournament golf under his belt. Now, this is only one round, obviously. Let's see what happens today. You know, it was a good start.
Brooks Koepka is just one off the pace at four back, and his confidence has returned. And there's the famous quote that he had about something, I'm paraphrasing, but something to the effect of winning majors is easier. And then he went through some like back of the envelope math. He said, you know, 80 guys, I'm going to be better than they are. And then another 30 are just going to not be playing well. And that leaves only a smaller group of players I have to beat. It was a fascinating look into the mind of an elite athlete and how he looks at this, but he backs it up.
He does back it up, and you said it right at the beginning there. He's got his swagger and his confidence clearly is back. It was missing for a while. You know, he tweaked his knee. He was having some knee problems, you know, before the 2020 year started, and it was altering his swing. He kind of lost the rhythm of his swing and had not been playing well at all until all of a sudden last week it kind of just clicked in. And he almost stole that, you know, WGC event from under Justin Thomas, who ended up winning it on Sunday. But I mean, it looks like a great run at the end of that tournament. And it's clear that he just feels differently at major championships. And it's the oddity of that is most guys get more amped up and more nervous and more edgy because there's only four majors, and you want to try to take advantage of each and every one of them. But Brooks just looks like a more relaxed and confident and, you know, an assured player at these majors. And it showed yesterday, and frankly, I'll be surprised if he's not within the final group or two on Sunday.
The conditions are fascinating at Harding Park because of where the course is situated, what we already know about San Francisco weather and the marine layer and when the fog comes in and out throughout the day. The wind look just got brutal later. Is there a way of, I mean, are there stats that tell us which golfers can retain the quality of their game in wind better than others?
Well, certain players do play better in the wind. You know, the European players are used to playing in some wind, you know, like the Shane Lowrys of the world, or and the guys from Texas, too. You know, although it didn't come into fruition yesterday because Jordan Spieth is usually a pretty good wind player. He is a Texas kid. Yeah, you're right. You don't really know what you're going to get here. I myself got here on Monday as a personal example, and I played golf late Monday afternoon with a couple of friends, and the front nine, it was, and I'm about maybe 7 miles away from where I was playing. Was 7 miles away from Harding Park, and the front nine was shirt sleeve weather. And I'm telling you, by the time we made the turn, that marine layer, just you could just see it kind of coming in off the Pacific Ocean. It was blowing 30, and it was freezing out. It was like really cold. I mean, I think the windshield was down like in the 40s or something, or maybe 50. So and that just happens here a little bit, like, you know, the European, you know, weather when you're playing in Ireland or Scotland or England. So, you know, it's the fun element of it, because everybody's got to deal with it.
What are you learning also about the mistakes that must be avoided in this particular setup? Does it have to do with how the rough is cut? Does it have to do with approach shots or just having to hit fairways? What are the musts and what are the must avoids?
Well, I mean, the must really at the beginning is just hitting the fairways, because the rough is, you know, you can get lucky and get a decent lie in the rough, but more often than not, the ball's going to sit down in this rough, and you're not going to be able to advance it to the green. The other interesting element to this too is with no fans. Most of the tournaments we're so used to watching, you've got all the fans who are along the ropes there, and they're walking around on the outside of the ropes, so they're matting down some of that grass. So very oftentimes, a miss that's just a couple yards off the fairway at a major championship is more difficult because the grass hasn't been walked on and been trampled than the miss that's a little more, you know, off the reservation, so to speak, because that's where all the fans have been walking. Well, you don't have any of that here, because there are no fans. So, you know, that's also an interesting dynamic, too. So, you know, you'll see sometimes some of these tournaments when there's fans, a guy might, like, blow a drive way to the right or the left, and you're like, oh, that guy's going to he's gonna be dead. And he'll get over to his ball, and he's got a great lie because the grass is all matted down because people have been walking on it all day. So you don't have that here. So that's a different element to it as well.
I had not considered that whatsoever. I had considered the element of extra pressure that it obviously adds, hearing a roar from elsewhere on the course and knowing that there's so many eyes are upon you when you're putting. And I've talked about it with a couple of our golf guests and Rich Lerner and David Dusek. And it gets back to, you know, some of what we've seen before about high pressure putts, whether it was what went down with JT and Morikawa, you know, running in putts. Do you think that guys are more relaxed over the ball when there are no fans, or does it really not change anything because of how carefully they've calibrated their own mentalities?
I think it goes both ways. It just depends on the player and what kind of drives him, because I'll go the opposite route. You know, we've spoken to Rory McIlroy over the last few weeks about the dynamic of no fans, and Rory's been very, very transparent about the fact that he finds it harder to kind of stay sharp and stay focused with no fans, because he can find his mind wandering a little bit, you know, and certain players, they thrive, you know, much more, you know, when the attention's on them and, you know, they know the spotlight's on them. You know, you have other players who are used to playing and not in front of a lot of people, you know. I mean, you know, the lesser known names don't have, you know, six deep against the rope watching them at golf tournaments. So it's kind of normal to them, you know. Now, you do bring up an interesting point, though, about the sounds and the roars when somebody makes a big putt or stuffs a great approach shot or something. I think that maybe comes into play on Sunday when guys are in contention, you know, maybe it's the last five, six groups, whatever it may be, you know, everybody's in the mix and they're coming down the stretch. I almost call that the Tiger factor, because you can always, I refer to the Masters, for example. Jack Nicklaus, for example, you knew around Augusta National what a Jack roar was. You knew if it was a birdie roar, if it was an eagle roar. Same thing with Tiger, you know, now more in the modern day. And that could rattle other guys around the golf course. Like, you know, you might be playing two groups behind Tiger, and you hear some of the plate people going nuts, you know, a couple of holes ahead. And you're thinking, all right, well, you know what? You know, something, he just did something great. You know, now I'm even further behind the eight ball. So you're not going to have that here, you know. So that's definitely a very, very different dynamic for these guys, you know, especially, you know, when it's coming down to crunch time on Sunday.
We're talking with Mark Cannizzaro, golf writer for the New York Post, who is present at the PGA Championship at Harding Park in San Francisco.
what does it mean to all of our narratives when we can have guys who are willing to wear the black hat or have it placed upon them? It seems like in the case of Bryson DeChambeau, he has no problem rankling the golfing mainstream and is almost embracing it a little bit, which is different than the other guy that I have on my anybody but list in Patrick Reed, who genuinely just seems to be a dislikable guy and nobody likes him. I don't think that really applies to DeChambeau in the same way. But I do believe that as a fan, there's some texture when there's guys that you're kind of feeling you're rooting against.
Yeah, there is. But I have to say, I don't like some of the things I've seen, some of the ways I've seen Bryson handle things in the last couple of months. I mean, you know, he's obviously been masterpiece theater here, you know, since the PGA Tour restart. You know, I mean, he's come back bulked up with, you know, 20, 30 extra pounds. He's driving it, you know, 20 yards longer. You know, he's talking about how he wants to change the game. And that's all well and good. But, you know, there's been some of those incidents, like, you know, the cameraman incident a few weeks ago in Detroit. And you know, I was at Memorial when he was, you know, when he got into it with the rules official, when he didn't think his ball was out of bounds against the fence at Jack's place. You know, then you had the fire ant thing where you had last week when he was trying to get a free drop because he said he was on a mound of fire ants. And, you know, and he's been a little surly and disrespectful, I think, to some of the tour officials and things like that. And to me, I think that's a turnoff. And I think, you know, unfortunately, you know, Bryson is of an age and an era where, you know, a lot of these, you know, athletes, and it's not just golf, but, you know, I'm just using this, you know, golf certainly as an example here. You know, everybody said yes to him, you know, since he was a kid. He's pampered. He has a special talent. So you kind of lose perspective a little bit, you know, about how to treat people. And you know, because I do think Bryson, you know, wants to be liked. I don't think he wants to be the black hat guy. But I just think he just doesn't get it in some areas. You know, when he was talking about that, you know, with the camera incident, when the cameraman was following him, in his opinion, too long after a bad shot. He's talking about, well, you know, you're hurting my brand. And mm-hmm. I mean, what are you talking about? You know, that's the cameraman's job. He's got an earpiece in, and his, you know, his producer, director in the truck is telling him to stay on that track. And so these things he just doesn't really understand. So it's fascinating to watch, and it's all the credit to what he's done on the golf course. But it's also become a little difficult to wrap your arms around Bryson and embrace him, you know, and root for him. I have to say, I mean, it really has been. And I'm sure that's kind of a wrestling match that a lot of people have when they watch him.
Jason Day is the leader, and he seems to be a guy who has gone through some things too. Remember his bout with vertigo that he had to overcome, and it just seemed like he wasn't on the radar for a while. What has restored him to not just respectability but serious contention?
Well, I think the only thing I could put my finger on with any tangible evidence is the fact that he's clearly a little healthier right now. His back seems to be, you know, because he's had, you know, on and off back issues for a while now. The vertigo certainly was a scary incident at Chambers Bay. But, you know, his back has really been the root of his problems. And, you know, it's funny. I'll give you just a quick, one of my colleagues from Australia and has known Jason for years, works for PGATour.com, was following Jason at Memorial 3 weeks ago in his first round. Jason was kind of struggling. He wasn't feeling great. And he was talking to my colleague, you know, in between holes a couple times. And he just said, you know, I think I'm going to, he was ready to withdraw. And he literally said, I think I can't do this. I'm just not feeling good. I can't do 4 days of this. And my colleague, you know, kind of chided him a little bit and said, you know, suck it up and, you know, go bury the next hole and, you know, let's see how you feel. Well, you know, so that's early in the first round on a Thursday. And Jason Day played really well. I think he finished tied for fourth, I want to say, that week. I mean, without looking at it, but he was definitely a top 10. And he ended up having a really, really good week. He was in the mix on Sunday, you know. So I think Jason kind of needs a little nudge sometimes. You know, he can be a little bit, let's use the word soft. I mean, I hate to say it, but there's just sometimes I think he lets things affect him a little bit too much and doesn't power through them. He powered through it at Memorial and had a damn good tournament. And right now, it seems like he's been pretty healthy the last few weeks, and he's had three top tens in a row. So, you know, and obviously that gets your confidence going. I mean, you know, that's golf is all confidence. These guys all hit the ball about the same, you know, with just varying differences of length, you know, whatnot. But it really just comes down to confidence and putting at the end of the day. That's what separates these guys on Sundays.
Any name lurking there that you have circled as someone to watch who we haven't discussed?
Well, I mean, Xander Schauffele is a guy who is, it just looks like he is ready to bust out. I mean, he's had really good results. He probably should have won Colonial. He was right. He had Colonial in his hands, really, the first tournament back of the restart down in Texas, and just kind of faltered a little bit down the stretch. In his short career, because he's a young guy, he has played well in big spots. He has played well in majors, and he's one of these guys that just doesn't have a glaring weakness. You can't look at him and say, well, this guy's a great driver of the ball, but his iron play is not that great, or you know, his putting is a little bit of weakness. He doesn't really have a weakness. I mean, there's nothing that stands out. So he's a guy that I could have, and he's right up there. You know, I both think he's four under, if I'm not mistaken. He's one of the four under. So only a shot off the lead. But he's a guy I would absolutely keep an eye on for the next 3 days.
Mark, really appreciate your time. Thank you.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
That is New York Post golf writer Mark Cannizzaro. And our PGA coverage on The Score is brought to you by Michelob Ultra. It's only worth it if you enjoy it. I thought about the Bulls conversation that we had yesterday with Joe Cowley based on his reporting about the likely retention of Jim Boylan by ownership for financial reasons. And I realized something, and I want to get to it next. We always talk about read what people do, not what people say. This Bulls situation is different, where it is material what is said if this actually happens. I'll tell you what I mean next on The Score.
I'm Jerry Reinsdorf. Made a move based on public opinion or based on what everyone was screaming in his direction. I mean, he's a bottom line guy. At the end of the day, it's the basketball business, but the key word is it's a business. And, that's always how he treated the Bulls. I mean, it's a business. It's not the passion. It's not the love he has with the White Sox. It's a business. And when has he made a decision because of pressure from fans, pressure from media, the obvious?
That was Joe Cowley, who joined us yesterday to talk about his report that it appears likely that for financial reasons and because ownership is apparently not letting Arturis Karnišovas make his own decisions, that Jim Boylan is going to return just because they want him to. That it doesn't really matter what the players think. It doesn't matter what Arturis Karnišovas thinks. It doesn't matter what Mark Eversley thinks. They just don't want to pay another coach, and they don't have any revenue coming in despite being worth $3.5 billion, that he believes that this is it, that Boylan is going to return. And I lamented that fact yesterday. There was a rending of garments and a wailing and a gnashing of teeth and a pleading to the heavens. But apparently to no avail. And I don't know what's going on. I don't know what we have to do. And I don't know how we find ourselves continually in a place where the Bulls refuse to get out of their own way. And they take all this goodwill and they decide that this is what they need. And they need to come into the modern era. And we hear them talk about everything player focused, player centric. It's all about the players. The players want a new coach. And they're saying, no, you don't get a new coach because we like this guy who no one else outside of certain people on the Chicago Bulls think is a competent coach, let alone a good one. So before we get into some of the dynamics of this, Casey Johnson of NBC Sports Chicago was on the station earlier with Mully and Haw, and he explained why he isn't yet ready to believe that Jim Boylan will necessarily return.
My take on what's going on is this. You know, Arturis Karnišovas was hired during a pandemic, so I have to believe the job interview process involved him seeking information on the breadth of his powers. I mean, you know, it's not like anything's changed here. The pandemic was happening then. It's happening now. The only subtle change is that, you know, now there's obviously the potential for 2021 to be played in a building without fans, which would obviously limit all teams' income, including the Bulls. But I don't really feel like this is a fluid story. I mean, Arturis Karnišovas has said that he's going to take time to get to know Jim Boylan and watch him in action. The first is happening. The second hasn't really happened. And so we're just letting it play out until that second scenario happens. You know, maybe there's a situation where there are some OTAs and Arturis has enough body of work to go to ownership to present the need for a coaching change. I don't think that's going to happen. But the point is, you know, there's a long way till the 2021 season starts, and we don't even know when it starts yet. So I feel like we're trying to put definitives and absolutes on a story that doesn't have that timeline. It's kind of a fluid story. Do I think Jim is going to be back? At this point, I do think he's going to be back. But to say that that's definitive or with certainty, I think, is a little premature.
Well, he didn't say it was definitive or with certainty, but how can we live in a world where any intelligent basketball people, given the opportunity to have full autonomy over a team, would bring back Jim Boylan? The players have actively asked you not to. It's supposed to be about the players. They're pleading. It's not even veiled signals here from Zach LaVine and Daniel Gafford and most recently Tomas Satoransky and other
guys.
That's
things
like,
he can work on.
Yeah, come on. Yeah, as a coach and as a person, there's no respect for the guy that put the punch clock in there. All the rolling eyes on the bench and just ignoring him during timeouts. This is insane. And anybody that would look this over and go through this deliberative process, this painstaking process of making this determination and then saying it's about the players, watch last year's games and stand in front of me and tell me that you think that this is the right coach for this team. God darn it. I am so sick of this crap. If they do this, how can you stand there? How can you have that press availability? And at some point, Karnaschova's got to quit hiding. Quit hiding. Come out and talk about your team. I don't know from whom they're hiding. Everything's so damn invisible. Why not be a little bit more transparent here? At some point, either Jerry Reinsdorf has to say, my decision, I don't want to spend the money. I like him as a coach, and we're keeping him. It doesn't matter what Arturis Karnaschovas thinks, or Arturis Karnaschovas has to say, after this whole process, after everything I've heard and everything I've said and everything I've seen, this is my decision. And I could have said, I want another coach, but I didn't, because I, the guy in charge of basketball, this team, it's my belief that he, Jim Boylan, is the best option for the Bulls to get us closer to winning a championship. He would have to say that. At some point, somebody's got to put their damn name on this decision, whatever it is and however it is. Tell us the truth. Tell us why you're doing it. Bulls fans deserve better than this garbage. You have all this goodwill. You take all this time to make the right decision and say a widely lauded decision to bring in one of the smartest guys in basketball, an up-and-coming executive. And say he has control. He's in charge. And then we start hearing of all these Gar Formanite little weaselly survivalists that are still in there, still whispering in ownership's ear about what they want and how, you know, this is, you should really keep him around because he's a really good coach. And all the Shakespearean behind the scenes drama, the whole point of hiring Karnaschovas was to get rid of this, to get rid of those people, to clear out all of this old backbiting stuff, all the back channel things, all the stuff that's standing in the Bulls' way, pulling in opposite directions, all the whisper campaigns and all the power games that go on back there. It's enough. It's well past enough. You screwed the pooch on this thing already if that's what's happening. But Arturis Karnaschovas should come out and say, I'm going through my process, or I have gone through it, and I have figured out after every player discussion that I've had and every bit of tape I've watched, my man is Jim Boylan. Have the guts to do that. Then I can know I'm not going to waste my time watching any of this garbage anymore. Sick of it. Be better than this. I am so up to here with it. And it's all the talking around everything. If you've got a guy who you think is better than Boylan, hire him. You want your front office, put it together. Make it work. Can you imagine how some of these players feel? And if you don't care what the players think, because you're going to get all different players, I want to know your plan. Because this is garbage. Meanwhile, your other teams are in the bubble, making deals, playing basketball, dynamic young teams of all kinds of young stars. We're learning new names every day of guys who coaches are developing. Not just saying they're developing. When TJ Warren's dropping 53, you got guys who are actually developing. And the Bulls players are going backward. They're going backward because they don't know when they're playing or what position they're playing. They don't respect their coach. You got Lauri Markkanen moping. You got guys getting hurt right and left. Daniel Gafford rolls an ankle. They can't even call a timeout to get his ass off the floor. We deserve better than this. We deserve better than this. And all this guesswork, all of us trying to figure out who thinks what, about whom, who's saying what to whom, who's running the damn team. We're still asking who's running the damn team. Figure it out, and somebody put their name on it. Karnishev sounded great when he took over. He sounded great, and he talked about how he was going to have authority. Well, if he has authority and he thinks Jim Boylan's the right guy for this team, you hired the wrong guy. Fix this. Sick of it. Okay. Jason Benetti, the voice of the Chicago White Sox, is going to join us to talk about the adventures of Eloy Jimenez and a bad night for the White Sox and what the weekend may hold. He's coming up next on The Score.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O'Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, oh.